and welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. Josh Parcell here with you. Rossi Three Stacks is going to drop by here in just a minute. But quickly, before we get started, just a quick reminder. If you guys like the show, do us a favor. Subscribe, download, spread the word, share the podcast with any of your friends, college football fans. We drop it every single week on Friday mornings, sometimes Thursday nights if we can get it out in time, but in enough time to get you ready for all the action every single week in college football. And the best way for us to grow is you guys. So we appreciate all of you for listening. And again, make sure to tell somebody about it. Make that your goal this week. One guy. Tell one guy or girl about the show. And tell them where to find it. Tell them how great it is. And tell them to buy the boat. Without further ado, let's get to our Week 8 preview with Rossi Three Stacks. Let's do it.
Tonight, hey, it was BYOG, bring your own guts.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Caught, racing, touchdown, Nittany Lions. We've got a ball game in Necktown.
But, sweetheart, this pick is strictly business.
Hello, Heisman.
Well, Ross, it's week 9, I think. I'm losing count now. Week 9 / week 2 / week 1 again, right?
Week 1.
Right,
week
1.5. Right.
Yeah. We made it, Josh. College football's here.
Yeah, yep. It's always week 1. Man, the wait is over. Oh, man. Well, wow. We have a lot to talk about tonight, and we were going to start with some crazy backdoor cover action up in Bloomington, Indiana, but we're going to have to save that because just about, 20 minutes before we fired up the pod, the news that felt like, I mean, we didn't know who it would be, but you knew at some point there was going to be news of a star player who tests positive for the coronavirus, and what do you know? It is the biggest star in college football. Trevor Lawrence has tested positive, and we're recording this late Thursday night. Literally, the news broke 20 minutes ago.
Yep.
And the rule states, I guess by the ACC, because every conference is different, as we've learned, that you've got to sit out at least 10 days. He's got to isolate for 10 days after he tested positive. So.
Right.
What a coincidence, but the Notre Dame game is in 9 days. They play Boston College on Saturday, but the Notre Dame game is in 9 days. And now, I don't know if you've seen this, Ross, but just perusing the old Twitter, the first question people are asking now is, when did he take the test? Because if he took the test yesterday, then I guess technically I'm doing the math here. He could play in the game. I'm assuming that that's going to be a night game. That's going to be a primetime game. It's in South Bend. Notre Dame plays some night games when it's in South Bend. A lot of their games are at 2:30. I'm assuming this is going to be a night game. Yeah, because they played Georgia in primetime a few years back.
Yeah,
it'll be a night game. So so even if you wanted to do like the literal 10-hour, like to the minute, I have to think that if he tested positive yesterday, he's good. So I am very much looking forward to that saga over the next day. It's probably going to be solved by the time this podcast comes out.
Yeah, saga is the right word for it, man. Wow, huge story. I thought when Saban tested positive, that was like as big of a name as you could get in college football. But I think Nick Saban and Trevor Lawrence are like two of the top three or four biggest names in the sport, certainly most recognizable. This is going to get a ton of attention. The takes are going to be flying. Obviously, first things first, everybody knows this. We have to talk about it. Hope he's all good. It seems like most of these people that are testing positive, like, fortunately, have mild symptoms or no symptoms, and they're fine. Like, the whole myocarditis thing that was a big scare earlier this year does not seem to have reared its head yet. So that's a good thing.
Yes, absolutely.
So, like, with that out of the way, you're right. It gets to be a fascinating situation for the ACC where you've got the matchup of the year in the conference. Like, what the one game that everybody would have circled is like, this is the benefit of having Notre Dame in the conference, mm-hmm. is you get to host Clemson in a primetime game. And now maybe there's a little juice taken out of that. So, Josh, I want to – you're the man for this job. Let's start talking about the actual football element of it. Let's say Trevor Lawrence is – obviously he's out this week, and let's say he can't play against Notre Dame either. Clemson actually obviously has a very capable backup quarterback. I'd like to give you the floor. First of all, please say his name, followed by the name of a recently drafted Auburn defensive back of your choosing.
Man, I'm not good with the pronunciations, but I got these two down. So get used to the name, DJ Uiagalelei. I nailed it. Couldn't do it any better. DJ Uiagalelei.
I think gun to my head, I would have said like Uiagalelei.
Well,
you get it right.
So the G we're learning in. I guess like the Polynesian, like Pacific Islander.
Right. Same thing with
dialect.
Tongue of Iloa.
Exactly. It's tongue of Iloa. Like everybody for years said tag of Iloa. And then we realized it's actually not that. So this is kind of the same thing where that A-G-A thing is actually an Unga. So it's DJ or Uiagalelei. So we got that. By the way, good thing he doesn't have to go up against Auburn this year and Noah Igbinoghi, or I guess last year when Noah Igbinoghi was on the field, because that would have been a mouthful for Chris Fowler up in the booth. But yeah, there you
Certainly
go. So those are my two names. I don't do much well, Ross, but I can pronounce really bizarre college football players with the best of them.
You certainly can. Well, DJU. is obviously an insanely talented guy, five-star quarterback. So if he's forced into action, Clemson still has a talent advantage over everybody that they're going to face this year in conference, including Notre Dame. I think it's a little more interesting though with an inexperienced quarterback potentially on the road at night in South Bend. Can DJU go up there and get a win if need be?
Yes, 100%. And if Lawrence was in the game, I mean, we're looking ahead now, but I already was prepared to back the Brinks truck up on Clemson next week. Because, let's face it, that game against Notre Dame is arguably the only game on their schedule that matters to those guys. I mean,
yep.
It could not be more obvious that they are so bored. I mean, the Miami game before was obviously one that they were up for, and you saw them flex their muscles early and often against the Canes. I mean, that game was over after the first quarter. But this game against Notre Dame really felt like the only other game on their schedule where you felt like, all right, Clemson's going to be ready for this game. They know it's going to be somewhat of a test, more so than anybody else that they have played, certainly more than Georgia Tech, certainly more than Syracuse, certainly more than anybody else they've got. So I was fully prepared for Clemson to, like I said, buy every boat against Notre Dame next week. But with Trevor out, to me, it doesn't change a whole heck of a lot. Does it make it more interesting? Yes. Obviously, you're talking about a guy who's going to get his first road start being in the biggest game of the year on the road in South Bend. Counterpoint, not going to be many people there. So it's not as if you're going into 85,000 in South Bend and, that can absolutely have an effect on a young kid. It's really not the same, right? So somewhat diminishes or dulls the impact of that being on the road.
Sure.
So let's think about that for a minute. Then furthermore, think back to, I can think of two examples. One, actually, this is a perfect example because it's going to be in the same building. But 2017, there was a freshman by the name of Jake Fromm who
I was just thinking about
made his first road start in South Bend. Now, the game was close, and Notre Dame absolutely had a chance to win. I think it was 2017, something like that. But Fromm played fine, pretty mistake-free football, and Georgia went up there and won a game that I can't remember if Georgia was favored. I think they might have been, but it was certainly expected to be close. Not like this week where, I mean, all due respect to Notre Dame, I still think that line's probably going to hover over a touchdown, maybe 10 points. But we have that example. The other example is the more famous one, and that's Tua jumping in midway through the national championship game that same season against Georgia,
right,
and looking like $1 million. I really do think with just the way that these kids are trained, the way they're brought up, the microscope that they're under from a younger age, they're not as, I think, susceptible to what we would call pressure, right?
Sure.
Think they were back in the day. So, and this kid's been, lauded as the number one guy for years. So
right.
I think he's certainly, I don't want to say ready, I guess, but he's as ready as you're going to get. I don't think that whole freshman in the bright lights thing is that big of a deal anymore, especially for a kid as talented as him. He's a freak.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the other example, the one most relevant to Clemson would be Chase Bryce having to come in the game against Syracuse a couple of years ago and rescue them. Mm-hmm. And we now see what kind of player Chase Bryce is. He's fine, but he's not the caliber player the DJ is. So with a week and a half at least of preparation and a whole game under his belt, I think he'll be fine. I think the rest of their team is more than talented enough to go up there and win. I'm actually with you decently comfortably. So we'll see what happens, man. I hate that this is the storyline. Again, hope Trevor Lawrence and anyone else on the team that has tested positive heals up quickly and there's no issues. But unfortunately, Josh, Trevor Lawrence and Clemson are not the only people dealing with COVID-19 this week. Wisconsin, after looking awesome last weekend, Graham Mertz comes out, tosses 5 touchdown passes. All that dude does is throw touchdown passes. He set the Under Armour All-American game record, the Army All-American game record for touchdown passes when he was in high school. Comes out, first big start, 5 touchdowns. Graham Mertz tested positive, and Wisconsin shuts down football. Not great for the Big Ten.
No, not great for the Big Ten at all. And this is controversial. You know, Wisconsin had 6 players test positive, 6 staff members test positive. There's an argument to be made that they could have fielded a team. I'm not 100% certain on, all of that. Obviously, they're Barry Alvarez in Wisconsin. They're taking an abundance of caution. And I think the concern for them is that if they were to continue playing, like they didn't halt activities, that the spread could get worse and it could affect other weeks, right? And this thing could drag out over the course of several weeks. And as we all know, the Big Ten really screwed this pooch from the beginning with, releasing a schedule in August that would have allowed for postponements of games. You could have moved games around, just like every other league has done. And then within a week of that, they decided to just cancel the season altogether. We don't need to relitigate that. Everybody knows that story, but this is the perfect example of why that mismanagement has now cost the players and cost the schools. And, Virginia Tech, who we talk about on this podcast often, obviously, we're both alums, we know the story well. Virginia Tech had 2 games postponed at the beginning of their season. Thankfully for them, they were able to move those games later in the year. The NC State game got delayed. The Virginia game got pushed to December. And there has not been a single game in any Power 5 conference, by the way. Virginia Tech is an example, but any Power 5 conference, there has not been a game canceled until now. There have been non-conference games canceled, but Power 5 conference games haven't been canceled. And unfortunately, they don't have a choice here. If you were in a situation where you could delay games or move games around, maybe Wisconsin isn't as afraid to take the field in a week like this and maybe take on that risk. But if you know that you may, risk the spread and it could affect 2-3 weeks, well, all of a sudden you may be putting half of your season at risk, and that's not something that they wanted to do. So that's one aspect of it, but I'm curious what your reaction is.
Yeah, basically exactly that. It was so clear to me. We talked about it with the ACC a little bit when a couple of games started getting canceled earlier. My take on all of it all along is that no Power 5 or any of these conferences, really, no conference should have 2 teams that are able and willing to play in a given weekend, both sitting at home not playing at this point in the season. We can't be giving up these opportunities when teams could be playing, because I think this is only going to start happening more and more.
Yep.
And we're seeing it. We're seeing it everywhere. So early in the year, when you had North Carolina sitting at home some weekends, Wake Forest sitting at home, Virginia sitting at home waiting while other teams couldn't play, I'm sorry if that's not the way the schedule was supposed to be outlined. Like, nothing in 2020 is fair. You need to be able to tell teams on Monday or, you know, Saturday of the previous week at the earliest, like, hey, you are now playing this team next weekend. Good luck. Is it fair? Of course not. Like, none of this. We've all had to adapt. And, like, yeah. Again, we're arguing about sports, amateur sports. So you want to make it as fair as possible, but you're clearly doing this to put games on television so that everybody can make money, that people in athletic departments can have their salaries paid next year, so these scholarships can get funded. Like, we all know what the deal is. So we need to just apply some common sense there and accept that it's not going to all go perfectly. We can't expect that to be the case. So just deal with it. Shift stuff around week to week. If you can play games, play them. Bank those games now and give yourself flexibility down the line. It's like we went into the season with a couple of timeouts, to use that analogy, and like we've just used them all right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the Big Ten went in with no timeouts, and they're like, well, all right. Got nothing to do here.
So the Big Ten is Pete Gillen.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, man. I agree. And it's not ideal. You're right. It's not exactly fair. But you could also make the argument that if the intent of this is to salvage whatever money you can from the season, then shouldn't you be as flexible and as dynamic with the schedule as you possibly can? I mean, losing these games is not great. And, you know, Major League Baseball did this. Major League Baseball changed series. They adapted mid-season. And now I'm not saying look to the Major League Baseball for a blueprint on how to handle the pandemic, but they at least did, you know, that part right, where they adapted their schedule as needed when things happened that were unexpected. You know, college football and specifically the Big Ten should be able to do the same. The thing that is bizarre to me, and a lot of people have pointed this out, I'm not, you know, breaking any news by saying this, but you know, the Big Ten's 21-day rule is nuts. The fact that you have a 14-day period,
no medical basis.
There's nothing of it. It is purely being overly cautious. Which, I mean, ultimately, can you fault the league for being overly cautious?
Sure.
I understand that, but at the same time, you've got these other leagues. I mean, that's been the whole problem all along, is that all of these leagues are operating under their own set of different rules and guidelines. But it is completely unfair to the players and the coaches and the staff in the Big Ten that they are following these guidelines that, based on copious amounts of other medical guidance, including from the CDC, don't suggest that they need to sit out that long. The 14-day isolation period, sure, but that extra 7 days is weird. And the inability to test out. And false positives, we clearly have seen, do exist. And as it stands right now, that doesn't matter. If you test positive in the Big Ten, that's it. And that doesn't make any sense. And that's yet another example of how the Big Ten has really made a mess of this. But fear not, Ross, because the Nebraska radio Twitter account was here to save the day. I sent this to you last night. This is amazing. So if y'all have not seen this, too late, because they finally deleted it. I don't know how long it was up. It was up for at least a few hours. And then I think finally it started going viral. And maybe somebody decided, man, maybe this is not the best idea. So Husker Sports on Twitter, which is not Nebraska's actual account. It's like Learfield IMG, like the radio guys, but still affiliated with the school. Like not like a rival site. This is Nebraska, their partner radio station. I guess they were doing like a coach's show. I don't know. But it said, it's time for tonight's Runza Twitter poll. Do you know what Runza is, by the way? Do you have any idea?
I do not. I'm assuming it's some kind of regional chain.
It's got to be fast food, because you'll see why in a second. Here was the Twitter poll last night from Husker Sports. If the roles were reversed and the Huskers had six players and six staff members sitting out with positive tests, would the game be played Saturday? The emoji after that. Which is just great, the fact that they have to add the emoji. And then if that's not enough, followed it up with retweet an answer for a chance to win a free Runza combo meal. So, I mean, capitalism at its finest.
Absolutely hilarious. Josh, quick update. Runza is, in fact, a fast food joint of sorts. A Runza, let's see, their signature sandwich. Ground beef seasoned with a top secret blend of spices.
Ooh.
We know they got some spice behind them, and mixed with cabbage and onions. all wrapped up in fresh baked bread. It's the taste that generations of Midwesterners have grown up loving, and it's our signature sandwich.
Oh, man.
Also, shout out Runza. Their tagline is, get your bunza to Runza. I Wait, love this company.
Do you work for Runza?
I should. They're my kind of guys.
Get your bunza to Runza. We might have to hit them up. We might need to do a little advertising partnership. I can be bought.
Yeah, the Runza combo meal of the week.
Poor Runza, by the way, caught in the crossfire of this. They didn't do any. Like, what did they do to deserve this?
This free advertisement for them, man. I bet they're sneaky. They are sneakily pumped about this.
Never. On second thought, you're 100% right. This is the best thing that ever happened to them. Now, all of college football country and all 10,000 people who voted in this poll or whatever it was, they've seen Runza, man. Get your buns in a Runza.
Craving a cabbage and ground beef sandwich all wrapped up in soft baked bread.
That is outstanding. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about what we were going to lead the podcast with until Trevor Lawrence had to happen, Wisconsin had to happen. But, Ross, I know it's been 5 days. I am still in absolute shock over how the Penn State-Indiana game ended. We talked about this last week, Ross, how stinky the line was. It was
six and a half.
Indiana was catching less than a touchdown. And lo and behold, halftime in Bloomington, Indiana's up 17-7, looking like they're going to cruise to a cover, hang on for the win maybe, but, cover the 6.5. Penn State comes back, takes a 21-20 lead, gets the ball back inside the red zone with 2 minutes to go. Penn State runs the ball up the middle. Indiana parts the Red Sea like Bob Knight running a 2-3 zone back in 1992, and the Penn State running back, I don't even remember who it was. Was it Devin Ford? I think it might have been Ford. I know they've had some injuries at running back. Whoever it was, plows through the middle. Nobody touches him, and you can see it, and I'm sure you could probably hear it if you were there because there's nobody at the game. The minute the guy crosses the goal line, he does the thing where he backs up. It's like, no, I didn't do it. Yeah. I didn't go across. It's like, bro, no, you did. You definitely crossed the by a yard and a half. So Penn State scores. Yep. They go up 8. So now Penn State's covering. Indiana drives all the way back down. They end up scoring, converting on the two-point conversion. It goes to overtime. Indiana's covering again. Then Penn State scores, goes up 7. They're covering again. Indiana comes down, scores the touchdown, and like the gambling gods, if they were shining down upon us, convinced Indiana to go for 2 so that it didn't matter convert or not, Indiana backers were going to cover. And then what happens? But Michael, by the way, it's not Penix, it is Penix Jr. Might have made that mistake on the show last week, but Michael Penix Jr.
What are you
going to do? Yeah, either way. Reaches out for the pylon. It is as close as you could possibly get to.
Really was.
I mean, the definition of inconclusive, but it ruled it good on the field. Indiana wins the game. Go crazy, Bloomington. But how wild was that finish, man?
Unbelievable. So I had not been watching it. I was with, shout out Bulldog Bob, favorite listener of the show. We were watching another game, and you were texting me about it, so we turned it on. Both of our wives, who like sports for sure, but are not don't really get into the games, were glued to the ending of this game. I mean, everybody was so into it. That's how you know it's a very engaging, once in the season kind of situation. I explained the gambling element of it all, but just once they saw that dude try not to score – but score, and then everything that ensued after that. What a wild game. I mean, it was impossible not to, unless you were on the wrong end of a gambling stick there, or if you're a Penn State fan, I guess it was horrible. But for everybody else, every other college fan, that was awesome. That was so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Such a whirlwind from the actual game perspective, but also the gambling perspective, of course. My takeaway from it, though, Josh, and this was one example. We saw it Todd Gurley for the Falcons did basically the exact same thing the next day.
Crazy.
There were some other pretty bad clock management decisions throughout the weekend. North Carolina almost cost themselves points in the first half because Mac Brown did not call a timeout. We had three of them right before the half and just let 15 seconds run off the clock when they didn't get a first down. Why are teams so bad at clock management, end of game and end of half clock management? And obviously the players in, you know, the Penn State and the Falcons scenario were the ones that went ahead and scored, and they kind of knew they weren't supposed to. But ultimately, it's on the coaches. Like, if your player does something, they need to be better coached.
Right.
To not do that. They have to understand what the situation – like, don't call a play that's going to get them near the goal line.
Right.
Take a knee or tell them to just dive right into the line. So I'm only 50% kidding when I say this, and I saw this going around the internet as well, so it's not a totally unique take either. But I'm like half serious that a team should have somebody who's just played Madden or NCAA football their whole life, like, consult on clock management stuff. I couldn't coach an actual football team. I didn't play the game past Pee Wee. Like, I know enough and, you know, more educated probably than most fans. Like, I'm not going to be the Monday morning quarterback that thinks I could go and actually coach a team. But I could absolutely manage those end of game and end of half clock situations better than a lot of these coaches do. And I am serious about that. I don't think they should actually hire me on a staff, but it couldn't hurt.
They've got now in the NFL these game management coaches that's literally their job. And it's pathetic, but it's honestly, it sounds silly or it sounds pathetic. It's really valuable. It's valuable to have a guy whose only job is to make, because, I mean, let's look at it. You and I, you're right. We play video games and you watch the game and you have an understanding of, I mean, sometimes it's obvious, like, you should be calling a timeout here. You should, but there are charts and there's a lot of data and there's a lot of analytics that go into, you know, when to call timeouts. Obviously the whole when to go for two and all that stuff is really popular these days, but just managing the clock. And in college, I don't know how much of that exists. I mean, a lot of it probably just falls on the head coach. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Finish your point, and then I'll address that.
I'll say this, because I've been on the field, on the sideline at a handful of college football games in my life. And again, I'm talking about this from a perspective of someone who's not coaching and who isn't paid millions of dollars to win games and make sure you're making all the right decisions. But I will tell you, it is very different. It's a different just kind of perspective, I guess. When you're field level, you don't have announcers. There's less kind of context, I guess, and you're looking at a clock up on the board.
Yeah.
It's a little different than watching it from a bird's eye view on television when you're also not thinking about what players are we running, what personnel is in the game, you know, down in distance. Like, there's obviously a million thoughts going in every play, and that's why they're paid a lot of money. So it sounds like I'm making an excuse, but I have noticed it's a lot harder to kind of recognize, you know, clock situation when you're not watching it on your couch on a TV or playing a video game. It's a little different.
Yeah,
not an excuse.
That's fair. We have basically a dashboard right in front of us watching the clock tick down and seeing how far away everybody is from getting set again and all that. You're right. I agree. With, you know, the timeouts left all nicely. You're right. We are like kind of in the control panel, but like put somebody in a little booth on the sideline and give them a headset and have them watch the game. Like we're doing
on
like
TV
in real time. Yeah, basically. If you can find a way to do it without the delay where they're watching it live like that, like, again, I'm half kidding about that, but I actually think it would help. So you're right about the analytics, and a lot of this stuff is just like they go by whatever the book says. So Mac Brown spent like 10 minutes in his press conference this week because people were, I think, rightfully questioning him on his end of half clock management.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the half, in the immediate post game, he was like, look, we kicked a field goal, and if Sam hadn't overthrown Michael Carter, we score a touchdown. So, like, we did what we wanted to do. We had timeouts left. I want to have timeouts left in the end in case I need them. And then in his, like, weekly media availability, he literally brought the book. Like,
oh my God.
The book that they use.
That's great.
And was, like, showing people, like, it's all in here. Like, anything I do, like, that's what the book said to do. The book said in that situation, we don't call timeout. Like, look, I didn't understand all that. Like, as Mac Brown does, went on for 10 minutes. But I still wish someone had been like, hey, Mac, like, I agree, but at some point you just got to have a feel for those things also. And I also sincerely doubt that the book said, hold on to all three of your timeouts right. while 15 seconds takes off.
Right, right. Must have missed that chapter.
It was funny that he very literally brought the book, and then it was great. He slammed it down on the table, like, to make a point and broke the audio in the press conference.
Oh, my God.
He literally threw the book at him.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I mean, look, we saw this in the World Series the other night, too, man. Like, you know, guy pulls a pitcher right. in, you know, the sixth inning, he's dealing, and everybody's up in arms over it. You know, I had a buddy make a great analogy to me. That sort of, it definitely applies to the baseball thing, but it sort of applies in football with just all these analytics and stuff, is that, you know, if you're playing blackjack and you have an 18 and the dealer's showing a six, the book says stay, right? The probability
yep.
of you winning is overwhelmingly high. Is it 100%? No. So on any individual hand, you might lose. Your dealer might get
right.
19, dealer might get 20, dealer might get 21. If you play enough hands and you stay on 18 every time the dealer shows a six, you're going to win. If that was,
right.
you know, in those instances. But in any one individual outcome, you may lose. And so, you know, the point being that, you know, Tampa Bay, in this case, we're talking baseball, but, you know, there's a lot of football scenarios like this, too. A lot of people questioning you know, teams like in the NFL going for two up seven to try to go up nine and
yeah.
end up losing and stuff. But the point is that, you know, in each individual moment, we get so reactionary. We watch one football game and we lose our minds. You know, the analytics guys will tell you over the course of time, that thing balances itself out. The counter to that, and I tend to fall on this side of it, is that how many games can you reasonably expect to be in, you know, those exact circumstances? For example, what you're talking about with the clock management thing is a little bit different, but like up seven with 3 minutes to go and go for two to go up nine. And if you don't get
right.
it, then it's, you know, there's all sorts of different, you know, possible outcomes there. But I get that analogy, but I do think in football, man, there's just not enough games to, I think, justify making these broad generalizations using analytics. I get it, but it's you're talking about a handful of games a year. It's not like you're talking about thousands of simulations like all these
yeah.
guys do. And I just, sometimes you do need to have feel.
You also, yep. You're dealing with people and like, you have to know your team. So, all right, I'll give Matt credit.
Totally.
He also ended by saying, look, last year against Clemson, the book said, kick the extra point, go to overtime. I knew our best chance to win because we were exhausted and they were the better team. Was to get 1 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
The book would disagree.
Yeah.
Now, it didn't work, but I think people unanimously were like, hey, that was the right decision.
Yep.
Because he has, like, he applied, he used judgment, took what the analytics said, and made the call that, like, I disagree here given this situation. So,
yep.
Yeah, you're right. I need to probably give coaches in general and players for sure.
Oh, no,
that's
no.
Like,
coaches screw it up all the time. You're right. coaches mess up the clock all the time. I'm not here. Like I said, I'm not here to defend coaches because I watched Virginia Tech down two scores, run the ball on three straight plays with five
yeah.
minutes to go against Wake
yeah.
Forest. So don't get me started on coaches who don't know how to manage the clock. It is just a little bit harder, I think, than it appears on TV.
No, it's a fair point. You're right about that.
Oh,
I think, well, I'm going to go ahead and just suggest that teams start building the Madden booths on the sideline.
Let's do it.
And have the best player at their school go in there and just sit there and consult them on timeout usage. That's my takeaway from all of this.
We got a lot of great ideas. All right, let's get to DraftKings and DraftKings of the Week. Ross, who's your DraftKings this week?
Yeah, man, DraftKings of the Week. David Bell, wide receiver from Purdue. 13 catches, 121 yards, and 3 touchdowns. In a game, they only won 24-20.
Come on, David.
He was, yeah, pretty awesome. That's some serious stats in an otherwise low-scoring, classic Iowa-Purdue game, by the way.
Absolutely.
Like, just booked that. 24-20 is such a good Iowa-Purdue score. it's a treat, though, when you get those kind of stats from a guy in a game that's relatively low-scoring. Like, that's crazy. 13 catches, 121 yards, 3 touchdowns. Good for you, David Bell.
That's what happens when Rondale Moore is out. Pretty much. Yeah. You got to go to one other guy. I don't know how many wide receivers are even on Purdue's roster.
Yeah, I couldn't name any. I could have named Rondale Moore and David Bell. That's it.
Taylor Stubblefield is not walking through that door. All right. That's a good one. Good win for Purdue, by the way. I mean, in all seriousness, really without Moore, no Jeff Brohm either getting that. It's a heck of a win. My draft king is our boy Malik Willis from Liberty. Now, this kid was an Auburn transfer, actually a one-time Virginia Tech commit, if I'm not mistaken. But now he's at Liberty. Yeah, he was definitely hot on. I feel like he was a commit. Someone listening to the pod might correct me, but
he was
definitely a big target for Tech, and I'm pretty sure he committed and then decommitted. But either way, ended up at Auburn. Yep. Now he's at Liberty. 345 passing yards, 6 touchdowns, 97 yards on the ground, and a rushing touchdown. So 7 touchdowns for this guy. They smoke Ole Miss, and then to top it off, which makes you the true draft king. The coach for Southern Miss, the interim coach, Scotty Walden, who's 30, who was the interim coach, literally quits after the game to go take an FCS coaching job in the middle of the season. He's like, I am done. I've had it with you guys. And now he's the head coach at Austin Peay. So congratulations, Malik Willis. You have literally cost Scotty Walden the will to coach at Southern Miss. I love
it. That is amazing. So you are correct, by the way. Tough timeline here from Malik Willis's 24/7 profile. December 29th, 2016, Auburn Tigers offer Malik Willis. Also December 29th, 2016, Malik Willis decommits from Virginia Tech Hokies. Oh, December 30th, 2016, Malik Willis commits to Auburn Tigers. January 8th, Malik Willis enrolls at Auburn Tigers. Holy smokes.
Oh, man.
What a week and a half for that guy. Well, hey, he made it back to Virginia eventually. Good for Malik. That's a heck of a week.
Yeah, I knew. That's why I couldn't remember if he even committed or not, because I was like, it didn't last very long. But, man.
He was committed for a little bit, but he certainly jumped on the Auburn offer.
Well, right.
What a crazy story.
That was it, man. Wild. All right, Ross, so who is your Craft King of the Week?
All right, my Craft King of the Week, Josh, is Grayson McCallan Scotch Whiskey.
Yes.
Josh, our chance, they're ranked. Another huge game this weekend. Grayson McCall, stud quarterback, didn't play last weekend. He's questionable for this weekend. We're starting the petition now. Let Grayson Playson. We're going to empty the wallet on McCallan Scotch Whiskey. We're going to drink it until they put him in this weekend. So let Grayson Playson.
We're nursing him back to health. Hey, heck of a win for the Shants, man. Getting the win without him.
Huge.
Last week. Keeping the undefeated streak alive. America's team, baby. College Football Country, the official team of the pod. Still ranked ahead of USC, by the way. Stuart Mandel pointed that out this week. How about that?
I love that. I love it. Here's my only concern, Josh. This is the hipster in me coming out. I feel like we were on Coastal Carolina earlier than everybody else.
Yeah.
And now I feel like they're the trendy team. Pat McAfee, my guy, is all over them. He loves their mullets. Everybody's starting to catch on to the teal field or whatever color we want to call it. Like, it's cool that they're undefeated. They're getting a lot of national attention, like you said. I think they are kind of America's team. They were College Football Country's team from the get-go.
Yeah.
Like, before, really, like real week one, week two of college football season, we picked them as our team. We've been riding them ever since. And now that everybody else is jumping on board, the hipster in me is like, did you even like them? Like, you didn't even, I liked them like a month ago. So now I'm getting a little territorial over my chance, but you know what? No, I'm going to change my attitude on that. Welcome to the bandwagon, America. We've been trying to tell you for weeks. These guys are awesome. So much fun to follow them. And I sure hope they keep this thing going for a little longer.
Just credit College Football Country. Anytime there's a sign on ESPN, anytime there's a game, anytime we're talking about America's team, just know where you heard it first. That's right. Coastal Carolina, the official team of College Football Country. All right. My Craft King of the Week, Ross, Alaskan Brewing Company, which I definitely didn't Google before the pod, now becomes a Traskin Brewing Company. Because Kyle Trask is going to light up the Missouri Tigers on Saturday night, 7:30 kick, Florida Mizzou on the old SEC alternate channel. So we're going to be following this one on Gamecast. SEC alternate means ESPN.com because we will be watching the play-by-play, and it's probably going to move fast and furious. I don't know if the browser can reload fast enough to keep up with Florida, and they're going to light up the Tigers on Saturday night. Here's the thing. So Missouri, if you just look at the SEC pass defense numbers, Missouri doesn't look that bad because Missouri played Tennessee and Jarrett Garantano, who's a complete mess. And then they played Kentucky last week, and credit to them, stifled Kentucky, but Kentucky's passing offense is an absolute wreck. More on that in a few minutes. But if you look at Missouri against the two elite teams that they played, or elite, I would say elite offenses, because LSU is not an elite team, but elite offenses that they played, LSU and Alabama, those two teams combined to go 52 of 80, 733 yards, 6 touchdowns, no picks. Kyle Trask has thrown at least 4 touchdowns in all of his games, 72% completion, 330 yards. I don't see the Tigers getting in his way. I have Florida. They were off last week with the game being postponed. Obviously, a lot of positive tests for them, so they were missing some players, might be out of practice. Could be a higher-scoring game if Florida's defense struggles as it has, especially with some time off. So I think Trask is going to need to put up some points in this one. Missouri quietly playing decent football, but I don't think they're going to stop Florida. So give me all of the Traskin Brewing Company I can get.
Now, Josh, are you actually going to be able to acquire any beers? Do you know any of the beers from Traskin Brewing Company? And do you have a means of getting them by Saturday?
You know what? Amazon Prime, you can get just about anything overnight these days.
I was thinking like Total Wine, but Amazon Prime, I love it. Get here from Alaska by Saturday.
That says everything that we need to know. Good. All right. Ross, before we get to buy the boat, we got to get to your trivia question for the week.
We do need to get to the trivia question, Josh. It's an important one.
Okay.
This week. No, it's not. It's Hit no me. Important than other. They're all important, Josh. Okay. My question for you. As of today, October 29th, there are 3 players that have scored 10-plus touchdowns this year in college football. Who are they?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow.
Or not thrown. So carry the pigskin across the goal line.
Yeah. I'm Jalen Waddle.
Nope.
Man. All right. By the way, thoughts and prayers to Waddle for that injury. That was awful news. If it's not Waddle, I can't imagine it'd be Devontae Smith, so I'm not going to go with any Alabama guys. Man, this is a good one. ETN?
Nope.
One of them's got to be Javonte Williams.
One of them is Javonte Williams. He is second in the country with 12 touchdowns.
All right, so he has 12. I don't know if I'm going to get any of the others. Khalil Herbert doesn't, I don't think, right?
No, he does not.
Yeah. Who are the other? Honestly, I could sit here all day. I don't think I can think of them. Who are they?
So you were dancing all around to the first one. Najee Harris has 14.
Oh, that makes sense.
He had like 5 that one week.
Yeah.
And then number 3 with 10 touchdowns, the only other guy in double figures, this guy named Jalen Darden, wide receiver from North Texas.
Let's go.
This dude, through 5 games, is averaging 138 yards and 2 touchdowns a game. And it's pretty much consistently around that every week. He didn't just have, like, one absurd game. So way to go, Jalen Darden. The mean green. He's one mean green wide receiver. Big-time touchdown totals thus far. Najee Harris with 14 through 5 games is ridiculous. So, honestly, so is Javonte Williams with 12 through 5 games. Last year, Josh, Jonathan Taylor led the country with 26 touchdowns, and that was in 14 games. So these guys are on pace to get a lot more than 26. In fact, 26 was the leading total in 2018 as well. I have to go back to 2017. Devin Singletary had 33, to where anybody had a lot more than that. So just keep an eye out for that. We could have some pretty prodigious touchdown totals this year if a couple of these guys keep it up.
The boys aren't out there tackling during the week.
No, they're not.
So a lot of points, but man, you stumped me on that. I should have gotten Harris. That's That was an obvious one.
I thought you'd get those two. Yeah. It was meant to stump you with the third one.
Yeah. I was thinking an Alabama guy. I just had the wrong Alabama guy. I should have had it.
All good.
I should have had it. All right, it got me on that one. All right. Let's get to Buy the Boat. Last week, 0-3. Apologies. We both admittedly tried to sell you on Pitt.
Yep.
Didn't work. Pitt plus, what was it, 10? Not even close. What was it, 45 to 3 final?
Yeah.
I texted you
pretty early on, because I texted you Saturday morning. I think we said it on the show, like, this just feels like one of those weird games that Pitt's going to mess around and win.
Oh, man.
And I texted you around halfway through the first quarter and said, narrator, it was not a weird game that Pitt was going to mess around and win.
Not even close. But you know what? Feel better about it, because Joel Klatt, he was on Colin Cowherd earlier this week, and I missed it last week, but apparently he was on the same wavelength as us. He said he thought Pitt was an upset special, and boy, was it ever not.
Yeah.
Huge win for Notre Dame. I would like to protest the Minnesota pick, because I gave out Minnesota plus 3, and they had over half of their defensive starters out with positive tests that weren't announced until minutes before the game. So I would I did not bet it. I would not have bet it. Or given it on the podcast, if I had known that, which is what makes this whole season so much of a crapshoot anyway, and it couldn't be more perfect, because I am now back to 500. I am 14-14-1. Just when I started to give myself some breathing room, an 0-3 week brings me right back to even 14-14-1. So we'll try to get back above it this week. Let's start, Ross. I'll go through my picks, and then we'll get to your teaser. I was going to start with Boston College and Clemson. Obviously not going to touch that now. I would be very curious. The line's 32. I would be very curious to see how far this line drops. Because if this line drops more than a touchdown, if it drops into the 23.5, 24 range, I would be tempted to take Clemson. Because as I said, I think there is – obviously a drop-off, but Clemson, by the way, you mentioned Chase Bryce earlier coming in and winning that Syracuse game. The irony of you mentioning that is that Travis Etienne won them that game. Chase Bryce turned around and handed it to Etienne about 25 times in the second half, and he came back. Well, Travis Etienne is still here, and they can go to him, who Travis Etienne has had a heck of a season so far, but some of his numbers a little bit off the pace he was on last year, so this could be a chance for him to get right. BC was absolutely carved apart on the ground a couple weeks ago by Virginia Tech. I imagine Clemson's going to be able to do the same. So I'm staying away from it, but if that line drops more than a touchdown and it gets into that 23-ish range, I might have to spread a little bit of capital on Clemson.
At a quick glance, I just saw it's down to 28 already.
I have to imagine it's going to keep coming down. I mean, you really think Lawrence is only worth 4 points to the spread? Man, maybe I'm wrong, but I bet some sharps might be jumping on Clemson. And seeing, that's just anything under 28 is also smart. I mean, that's a key number. So,
my gun to my head, it drops down closer to 25 and then gets bet back up to 28 plus by game time.
And I wanted to bet Boston College in this, by the way. I was prepared to take BC in the over, but now I'm just not going to touch it. So,
All
right, let's go to this one. Michigan State, Michigan, Ross. Just quickly here, Michigan State, what are we doing? We lose to Rutgers last week, 38-27, seven turnovers by Sparty. They did pick up about half of their third downs. They moved the ball through the air pretty well. Rocky Lombardi, which, by the way, perfect Big Ten quarterback name, Rocky Lombardi, throws
amazing
for 300 and some yards, three touchdowns. But Michigan State, man, awful on the ground. When Rutgers holds you to 1.3 yards per carry, probably not a good sign going into a game against Michigan and Don Brown. But I'll tell you this, though. The score is deceiving. So it was 38-27, I think, right? Rutgers, four of their five touchdown drives were very short on many of them, right? A 1 yard touchdown drive, a 23 yard touchdown drive, a 26 yard drive, and then they had one that was 53. But four of their five drives, They opened with a big long drive, and then four of their five touchdown drives were after turnovers or with really short fields. So Michigan State only gave up 201 yards in this game after that opening, I think it was a 75-yard drive. So the Sparty defense, fine. I mean, you got put in a tough spot, and you did the best you could. I love the under here. You know, Michigan-Minnesota, Michigan blows out Minnesota last week. And, you know, as we mentioned, Minnesota had a ton of, you know, positive tests. But Minnesota, right, two of their touchdowns came on a two-play 17-yard drive on the opening drive of the game after a blocked punt. And then they scored on a scoop and score a few minutes later. So they only put 10 points on the board off of actual sustained drives on offense, not get even, you know, a defensive score or coming off of a turnover deep in their own territory. So I'm gonna bet the under here. The total's 52.5. Michigan State's defense, I trust in you. I'm not gonna buy all in on Michigan's defense quite yet, considering they just carved up basically the backups for the Golden Gophers. This, right, you mentioned the Purdue-Iowa game is a very Purdue-Iowa score. Yeah. This feels to me like 23-13. Maybe like 31, like maybe Michigan scores a little bit because Michigan should win this game. And I was tempted to take Michigan on the line, but 24.5 is a ton. Give me Michigan in a low scoring game. Give me Don Brown and Mel Tucker's defense getting after it. I like the under here a lot.
Man, I forgot how much I love Big Ten football and specifically betting on Big Ten football until it was back. Like, we've joked about this, but college football really is finally here now that we have Big Ten games that are going to be played in the 30s and 40s.
Should we just bet the under every week on the Big Ten? Like, every Big Ten game, just Big Ten unders.
Big Ten under. Big Ten under. I'd be interested to see how that would play out over the course of a whole season.
Might have to do a little experiment.
I'm down. Yeah, I love it.
All right, let's move on. Well, outside the Big Ten, quickly, Georgia, Kentucky. I'm all over the dogs in this one, man. Minus 17. It's a noon kick on the SEC Network. Kentucky making a change at quarterback. Terry Wilson's banged up. They're going with Joey Gatewood, the kid from Auburn, elite recruit at Auburn, loses the job to Bo Nix, ends up transferring to Kentucky. Chris Doering on the SEC Network last week was asking openly on the air if Kentucky knew if the forward pass was legal. So there's a lot of problems right now with the old passing attack, the Kentucky not really slinging it around the yard. They're really struggling to move the ball, man. And I don't know how much of an impact Gatewood's going to have because Georgia's defense is just sick. Do not be fooled into thinking that Alabama somehow exposed Georgia. Alabama is that good. And there, I've read a few people who have even written about how Georgia's defense actually played well in that game.
Yeah.
Even giving up 41 points. So I'm good with the dogs in this spot. Even after giving up 40 plus to Bama, they still lead the SEC in scoring defense. They still lead the SEC in rush defense. I really do think that if you look at from basically the Stetson Bennett era from the third quarter of the Arkansas game in the opening week up until halftime of the Alabama game, Georgia has played like an absolute machine. I think they get back to that this week against a beleaguered offense that struggles to move the ball. I'm taking Georgia big. I think, you know, Vegas has it around, you know, the over-under is 42.5, so it means the implied total here for, you know, 30-13 Georgia. I'm thinking it's the dogs 38-7, 42-10. I love Georgia in this one. I would be tempted to maybe even go over here because I think dogs score a bunch of points, but give me Georgia minus 17. You got any thoughts on that one?
I like it. Did you see what Saban said after that game?
No, I don't think so. No.
So he said, it's very interesting coming from Nick Saban. He said, it used to be that a good defense could stop a good offense. And to some of the effect of, like, nowadays in college football, like, a great defense can't stop a great offense. Like, if an offense is really humming, there's nothing that a great defense can do to stop it. If they're executing, just like the way the game is officiated, the way offenses have evolved right now. And I think that was just he was talking obviously about the Georgia game, and I think he meant it as like, hey, that was a really, really good defense we played, and they played well. Our offense was just really clicking.
Right.
But from Nick Saban and like his background, and I think he's exactly right. Like, there's nothing Georgia could do there when Alabama is humming like that.
Yep.
So you're not gonna see anything like that against Kentucky. I think they're gonna put some. I'm with you. I've got a 35-10 in my mind, so maybe not quite as bullish as you, but I agree that they win. Sure.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And a quick side note before we get to the last couple games here, because you just brought this up. We don't spend a lot of time on it, but, man, you know, people make a big deal sometimes about, this offense is ranked here and this defense is ranked really low. This team's going to dominate. Like, for example, Clemson, North Carolina is what I'm thinking about. I think North Carolina has the best shot of anybody in the ACC to beat Clemson. And the reason for that is I don't care how bad North Carolina's defense is. You only get 7 points when you score. So if if Clemson's going to score on Notre Dame's defense is a lot better than North Carolina's. But Clemson's going to score on, I mean, if Trevor Lawrence is playing, Clemson's going to score on Notre Dame. So my question is, who can score on Clemson, right?
Right.
So I think North Carolina's offense can score on Clemson better than Notre Dame's can. So if you're just trading touchdowns, who do I trust more to trade touchdowns? I trust North Carolina, using those two as an example of this. But to Nick Saban's point, great defenses can't stop great offenses. So as Georgia's learning, it's not enough to have an elite defense and there's a lot more going on there with having to play Stetson Bennett and whatnot, but like, it's not enough to just have a great defense if your offense can't go blow for blow with the best of the best. And
that's right.
I think it's really important to remember that sometimes, because people will try to make the case, you know, using that Clemson, North Carolina example, like, oh, well, North Carolina's defense, they can't slow down Clemson. It's like, nobody can slow down Clemson. So let's just forget about that. And let's ask who can keep up with Clemson. That's the real question. And same thing applies with Alabama or any of those other schools. All right, speaking of Notre Dame, on the road against Georgia Tech, Irish minus 20, over under 57.5, 3:30 kick on ABC. As we mentioned before, the Irish finally opened it up against Pitt. I found this interesting, Ross. We were down on Notre Dame's offense coming off the Louisville game. It was a 12-7 game.
We were.
Should have been 19-7. They knelt on the ball at the end of the game. But either way, not a great performance on the offensive side for Notre Dame. Tony Dungy told Colin Cowherd last week that, because I didn't watch the first half of the Louisville game, they tried to open it up, but it was so windy. It was like one of the windiest games in the history of Notre Dame Stadium. And Notre Dame was a little stubborn trying to answer, I think, some of the critics who had said that they weren't being, you know, explosive enough or aggressive enough on offense. Well, they finally realized, all right, the wind's blowing all over the place. Let's just turn around, hand it to Kyron Williams, and let's get out of here with a win. And that's why that game and that score on the surface looked like, oh, man, Notre Dame's offense, what's wrong? Last week, totally opened it up. Pitt has a great run defense. Didn't matter. Notre Dame went over the top. Ian Book, 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. They blow out Pitt. I think Georgia Tech's going in the wrong direction. And we've been fans of Georgia Tech on this podcast, Ross. We have talked up Jeff Collins and those boys. But they're going in the wrong direction right now. And it's still, I still think that they've got what it takes. Jeff Collins and that staff have what it takes to rebuild. But, man, right now they just don't have the horses. And if they don't force turnovers, they're not competitive. And giving up 41 points a game, 480 yards, they were down 24-0 in the early second quarter to Boston College. I think Notre Dame, I think Notre Dame keeps getting better. A look-ahead spot, be careful of that look-ahead spot with Clemson the following week, but it to me feels like this is a game where Notre Dame can keep kind of pushing that offense a little bit, testing what they're capable of.
So
I like Notre Dame.
I'm going to go back to the well here on my this feels like a game. This feels like a Jeff Collins hangs around for no reason game to me.
Okay.
I actually like Georgia Tech here with that many points.
Okay.
And, I don't think I put it in my teaser, but I don't know why, because everything you said is correct. But when I start extrapolating my Jeff Collins is Buzz Williams of college football take, this is the kind of game that Buzz would get the boys up for, and they'd hang around. I think Jeff Collins has them ready to do the same for a lot of the reasons, really mostly just because of the look-ahead spot and because I have a gut feeling about it. So 20's a lot. I think Notre Dame, yes, they scored a lot of points. A lot of those receivers, though, they went over the top, were making really tough contested catches and then scoring on them. So I don't know. I'm not 100% sold on Notre Dame's offense yet. I think Georgia Tech makes a couple big plays. I think Notre Dame sleepwalks a little bit. They keep it close. I think Notre Dame ends up winning, I think it's closer than it should be.
I don't hate the look ahead theory there. I don't hate it at all. My final pick here really quickly. Actually, it's not even a pick, but I do want to just touch on the game really quickly because I want it to be recorded so that everybody can know when Arkansas covers the 12 against Texas A&M that I dared myself to do it and couldn't pull the trigger. But this number opened at 15. Arkansas getting 15 points on the road in College Station. It's a 55 total, 7:30 p.m. kick on the SEC Network. Arkansas, as many people have pointed out, should be 3-1 right now. They were absolutely robbed against Auburn, but they are such a popular underdog. Ross, I went and read a bunch of different media picks all over the place, gambling experts, sports writers, everybody, you name it, and their thoughts on this game, and 90% of them are on Arkansas.
Yeah, that's scary.
When that happens, it scares the hell out of me. I can't do it. I'm going to hate myself for not taking them. I could throw it in a teaser, maybe get it to 19. I'd feel better about it. But A&M did, I mean, to their credit, you know, that's a big win against Florida a few weeks ago. I think A&M is they're a little better than maybe people want to acknowledge. And great running game. Isaiah Spiller, I believe. Yeah, he's fantastic. So I think this could be a game that is kind of an old throwback Southwest Conference game with some teams that want to run the football, play good defense. But I'll stay away from it. But, man, I'm tempted. I'm tempted. And if Arkansas covers the 12, I just want everybody to know I'm an idiot and talk myself out of it.
Hey, I appreciate you putting it on the record right now. So, yeah, we all have that soundbite. And either way, you're going to come out looking good here. So that was a smart move right there.
All right. I aim to tease time, baby. Who you got this week?
Let's do it. All right. First things first, UNC -7. We're going to tease them to even at UVA. They're not going to lose. Play that Ooh. Audio back if I'm wrong about that.
Ooh. So, you're calling your shot.
I am. I told you I felt weird about the Florida State game before
UVA,
it happened.
UVA hung around. Lost. They hung around with Miami UVA last week.
They certainly did. UVA is not bad. They are a sneaky good 1-4 team. If you look at their actual loss, they lost to Clemson. They lost to at Miami. They lost to NC State when NC State still had
Leary.
Leary.
Yep.
And then they lost to a Wake Forest team that now looks like they're better than we thought. So they're really not that bad. And they have Brennan Armstrong back. So I really shouldn't be that confident. I think UNC already had their wake-up call, though. And I think that offense is going to keep rolling. I'm pretty high on them right now. It took me a little bit to get into it. Again, my spidey senses were up for the right reason against Florida State. Carolina's going to go in there. They're going to get a win. They might not win by a couple touchdowns. They might not even cover the 7, but they're going to go win. So I love them at even.
What else
next,
you got?
Ohio State, -12. We're going to tease them to -5 at Penn State. Just love that number more than anything. Ohio State's going to win this game by touchdown plus. I know that game can get weird. I know Penn State's going to – maybe they're going to play out of their minds. Who knows? Ohio State's going to win the game by touchdown plus. Purdue, my David Bell train, -7. We're going to tease them to even at Illinois. So that just seems like a no-brainer to me. Like you said, impressive win. Last week against Iowa, now they're going to go play a worse team in Illinois. There's no home field advantage situation right here. They're going to win that game. So love the number of -7.
Has Illinois ever had home field advantage?
Well, sure. Yeah, I don't know. Fair point.
No, it sounded good, though.
That's a fair point. I just mean in Vegas's eyes, you shouldn't be getting like the full 3 or 6 points or whatever it is. Fair point.
Totally fair. What else? You got a few more.
Florida -12.5 down to -5.5 against Missouri. You already talked about that one. I agree with you. I think Florida's going to light it up. I think they win this game in a high scoring game, like 42-28 or something like that, maybe even higher than that. Then finally, Texas +3.5. I like them to +10.5 against Oklahoma State. I think Texas, I know it's Oklahoma State is the Big 12's last great hope here. To get a team in the playoffs, still undefeated. I haven't totally – I know Tom Herman might be getting fired soon. I know all of it. I haven't totally sold on Texas all the way yet. I think they're good. I still have a little bit of hope left. I think they at least hang around and don't lose this game by double figure. So I like teasing them 10.5.
Man, Tom Herman is a dog. He is very comfortable when their backs are against the wall. Nobody believes in him. They're a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of an underdog here against the all of a sudden the best team in the conference. Tom Herman is a dog, not bad. And you tease it, get it to 10.5. Texas has a lot of talent. It's you do, and if there's ever a moment where Texas absolutely has to win, it's now. Herman really could be on the way out, and that's wild to think about because I mean there was a literal backdoor bidding war for that guy between Texas and LSU a few years ago, and Texas won, and now. Yep. You know, LSU has a national championship, but even LSU might not feel too great about their guy. I mean, it's crazy how this thing goes, but I don't hate that. Oklahoma State, they got Spencer Sanders back now, but a team that not your older brother's Oklahoma State team, right? They're not
gonna,
spread it out, light it up with you know, some big Biletnikoff Award wide receiver and, you know, try to throw it all over the place. So Texas, you know, could score some points, keep up with them. Definitely a good defense in Oklahoma State's case. So I like it. I like it, Ross. Well, you're probably going to hit. I'm going to go whatever I got. How many games did I pick? I don't even know. 1, 2, 3. I'll go 2-2 this week. Just go ahead and write me down for 2-2. It doesn't matter. And then I would have been 3-2 if I'd bet Arkansas. But, a loss. All right. Well, hey, man. Looking forward to week one. Your season starts now.
We made it, Josh.
Oh, man. It feels great.
It does feel good. College football's finally here. And Halloween weekend. What a day. And a full moon. What a Saturday.
Wow.
It's gonna be, Josh.
A little weather advice for the people on the way out. All right, Ross. Well,
hey.
Buddy. We will talk to you guys next week for week one of college football. And and enjoy the games this weekend. He's Rossi Three Stacks. I'm Josh Parcell. We out.
See ya.